Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And good evening to you, Mr. Ben. How are you?
We're all good. Very well. Thank you very much.
I hope you are. Everyone.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Also available on the World Wide Web at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast. Lots to discuss as usual. Last week's launch of Psyche, how to make roads on the moon and... Of course, we'll start with, as usual, what to see in the night sky.
Isn't the space station, unfortunately, not in our skies just at the moment. It disappeared on October the 3rd and is not back in our evening skies. Now, it will appear the odd time during the morning time and during the next month or so. And November the 18th to December the 7th is the time to watch out for our evening passes here in Dublin. For the International Space Station. Unfortunately, Mercury is out of sight because it's in conjunction with the Sun. Venus is brilliant at magnitude minus 4.6, still a great sight. I was out this morning again, would you believe, when I was raiding the fridge as usual, and there it was, very, very bright. And it shines high in the east just before and during dawn. And it rises about 2.5 hours before dawn's first light. Yep, that makes total sense. It's a weird witching hour apparition on the eastern horizon. And Mars, unfortunately, out of sight, also behind the glare of the sun. It's going to take another 6 months before that gets back to us. They're certainly into the new year anyway. Well into the new year. Jupiter, minus 2.8. It's another fine sight too, rises in the east, northeast in twilight, and it dominates the east later in the evening and shines highest in the south after midnight. Saturn, now we did get to see this a few weeks back, Ben, because it was fairly close to the moon, and it's quite dim at plus 0.6. I suppose it's the brightest star in the southeast in twilight. It's highest in the south around 10 p.m., just at the moment, and Uranus and Neptune, unfortunately, they're seeable all right, but very, very dim, so you need a good pair of binoculars and or a telescope to see those two as well. So that's what's around in the skies just at the moment.
Thank you, John. Of course, we have the sun and the moon, and the moon is not up above our horizon at the moment from our vantage point here in Dublin, Ireland, but it will rise tomorrow afternoon. Just before about a quarter to one or so, 12:43 p.m., it will be a 15% waxing crescent at that stage. And when it passes the meridian or is due south and at its highest, that'll be at 11 minutes past four tomorrow afternoon. And when it sets tomorrow at 7:30 in the evening, it will be a slightly bigger at 17% waning crescent. Waxing crescent moon, I should say, of course, as we head up to the first quarter moon, which will be on Sunday the 22nd at 4:30 in the morning. And the sun rises in Dublin tomorrow at 7:56 a.m., which is 13 minutes later than a week ago, and will pass the meridian, or will be due south at 1:10, which is 1 minute earlier than a week ago. And then the sun sets at 6:22 p.m., and from then until 6:58 p.m. we'll have civil twilight. And from then until 7:38 p.m. we'll have nautical twilight. And from then until 8:18 p.m. we'll have astronomical twilight. And after 8:18 p.m. it will be astronomical night. That means there's 29 minutes less daylight than a week ago. And tomorrow we'll have another 4 minutes and 5 seconds shaved off that when the time between sunrise and sunset will be 10 hours and 26 minutes. And just going back to Alan's text last week, he was mentioning Blue Walker 3, the satellite. So I had a look at it on heavens-above.com. And you will be, well, I was going to say you will be able to see it, but I think it's cloudy over most of the country. But if it were clear, and if it's clear where you are at 8:20 in a few minutes' time, you will be able to see it. It goes west to east. It'll be almost directly overhead, about 83 degrees, I think, altitude. And it will be maximum magnitude now of plus 1.8, which is not very bright. It's nowhere near, of course, the International Space Station. But you will see a little bright dot move across the sky if you have a clear sky at 8:20 in 15 minutes' time. And, of course, there's other times there on heavensabove.com. You get the International Space Station times and also Starlink if they're passing over your way.
Yes, indeed. Now, things I like to do is to see if there are photographs of the surface of the moon. And there are. And if you're interested in the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter's recent photographs, which you can catch quite quickly and easily on the internet, June the 27th, 2020, was a photograph of a nice, clear spot on the moon. And then on August the 21st, 2023, there was a Luna 25 lander which crashed into the site, and you can see that quite clearly on the surface of the moon. I'm just trying to see exactly where it is that would be relative to where we are, but it's easily lookable, upable. I can get my the correct English on that one. So it's the first moon probe in 47 years, and it crashed onto the moon on August 21st. Well, it actually crashed on August the 2nd, but it took a few days for the LRO, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, to catch the crash site. And a mighty big crash site it is too. So that's a little thing worth looking for. Now, I must remind you that coming up shortly in the next couple of days, we have the Orionid meteor shower of 2023. This is a good one. The moon is not too, it's only at its first quarter in around that time, so it's not going to be really annoying us. But you will get to see maybe up to 20 meters per hour. It's from the Halley's Comet, and you can see it in both hemispheres. So if you are listening in from the south of the equator, as we like to hear from you the odd time, you can get to see them down there as well. So they're very active every year in October, usually peaking in around the 20th or 21st. But this year the peak is the 21st into the 22nd, which is only in a few days' time. And it's quite a fun thing to watch, is a good meteor shower, especially if you have a really good clear night like we had with the Perseids during a few months back. And although it was clouded over to start, it clouded over to finish, there was a patch in the middle, sort of 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning, where we got to see a good few shooting stars. So just remember that day, 21st into the 22nd, and you get to see the Orionid meteor shower, about 20 meteors per hour in that. So, and the best time after midnight, of course.
Thank you, John, for that. Now, if and when, well, it's a matter of when, isn't it? We go back to the moon and there's plans for lunar bases. And, of course, people want to get around and drive around like we do on this planet. And to do that, to get around from base to base, you're going to need some roads. So how do you build roads on the moon? Well, it won't be the material there for concrete, that's for sure. Because, as we know from the Apollo missions in particular, the regolith, that fine dusty sand or grit that covers the moon, gets everywhere. Because the moon is essentially dry, they tend to be very, causes a lot of static. I know the Apollo astronauts had a lot of trouble with them, and the regolith or the dust from the moon would just get everywhere, all over their suits and into the lunar landers, and it just got everywhere. So the plan is, how you get around, you're going to make some roads. What are you going to make it from? Well, the most, I suppose, common material up there is, in fact, the regolith. So there's been some experiments here on Earth using synthetic, or what we think, well, we know what the regolith is made of. And They're going to, it's basically using a laser, carbon dioxide. Well, they're here on Earth, they're using carbon dioxide lasers to essentially fuse. There's a lot of silicate in it. It's like glass. It will be quite brittle. So if it breaks, well, you can just go ahead and repair it, of course. But when they're on the moon, they won't use they won't bring up a carbon dioxide laser. They'll use concentrated sunlight, you know, like essentially a magnifying glass. And they've successfully fused this regolith into globules of 10 to 20 centimeters in diameter, so, and then they can stick them together. So they reckon they'll be able to use them for the pads, you know, landing pads, and also little, I was going to say dust roads, but not quite dust roads, to get from place to place. And that they'll be able to make, they could, speaking of landing pads, they reckon they could make a 100 square meter landing pad with a thickness of 2 centimeters of the dense material, and that they'd be able to construct that in about 115 days. So
it's not bad, really.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Although, you know, it's that dust gets everywhere. It's it's hard to explain what it looked like. I don't know whether you've seen any. But it's very like ash.
Rich. Well,
you know, the burnt ash in the fire, it just gets once it gets everywhere, it just gets everywhere, and it's not pleasant at all. And they came back on the spacesuits and everything, so it was very, very hard to get rid of it as well. So that's it. So how do you make holes in the moon? So they've got to channel the sun's energy like a magnifying glass to melt their way through. So if they can make a little road. Now, how long the road is, where it needs to go?
Base to base, cave to cave, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
I think the important thing at this stage is it seems, in theory, it can be done. You can build these roads. They sound as like they're essentially going to be made of glass. But,
That's what it is. No, it'll be when the Apollo 17 lander lost one of its fenders at the back of the vehicle. It became so coated in driven up dust that it threatened to overheat. Until the astronauts improvised a fix using recycled lunar maps.
That was a rather famous photo. Yeah, have you seen that one?
Yeah.
It's basically duct tape and they all maps.
Yeah.
To mend the fender.
Yeah. Mend the fender, yeah. Papier mâché or something. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the notable ones. But seeing them driving around the place, they flicked, because the wires were sort of made of meshy type material rather than tires or normal wheels. It's gathered in like a mixer in one of these food mixer type things and flicked it all over the place. So they've got to pave the road for large areas sintering the regolith up there. So a bit of luck now, they'll come up to the technology. So we got to get there. We got to find somewhere to live. We got to build buildings, and then we got to build roads. So hotels would be next, I would imagine.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And we're also available live, of course, on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast.
Now, we mentioned that Frank Rubio came back to Earth after 371 days in space, and he has spent a little bit of time telling us little bits of things and the things he has to get used to back here on Earth, as he calls the pesky thing that Earthlings call gravity is one of the big ones on that. And walking, he said, hurts a little bit for the first few days, and the soles of your feet and lower back, you know, I know all about that. And he said also at the news conference that these were the things. So there's a certain amount of pain that comes with the fact that your lower back now supports half of your weight, which is probably right. So he returned, of course, 2 weeks ago after spending his 371 days in space, having taken off in September of last year aboard the Russian rocket for what was supposed to be a routine 6-month mission. So he ended up a little bit longer than that as well. So I'm sure a few more things will sneak in as to what has happened to parts of the body. It just doesn't respond to the way you expect it to. Your mind is perfectly clear, of course, but I suppose you have to get your muscles used to the effects of the earth, gravity and everything. So it's interesting to read bits and pieces along this. So that's Googleable as well. So if you want to follow that, Frank Rubio and his trip back to Earth from space.
Thank you, John. Now, the space age, it seems to be leaving fingerprints of its activity in the upper atmosphere, the stratosphere, that is. As you know, we're down here in the troposphere. But there has been some flights using special aircraft and special samplers, and they have flown up to 19 kilometers into the stratosphere to take samples of that part of the atmosphere. And there seems to be a lot of pollution, I suppose, as you could call it, but there are a lot of metallic ions, lead and aluminium, lithium, copper, lead, and apparently in the same type of proportions that you would find in spacecraft. So because of all the spacecraft going up and especially coming down as they burn through the atmosphere, because of the heat and due to the friction, some of it is ionized and it is contaminating the atmosphere. And of course, we don't know what the long-term effects of this is going to be. Now, of course, we do have meteors and meteorites coming through, little bits of dust, the Orionids you mentioned, coming up, and a lot of them, of course, won't survive their entry through the atmosphere. But that material is going somewhere. It's ionized, it doesn't fall to Earth. Well, if it does, it's a meteorite. But they're finding that this is the amount of material now in the stratosphere due to rocket casings and satellite re-entries is much, much greater than the little bits left behind by the meteors or the meteorites. And, of course, the problem is, or what could be an issue, is what the long-term effect is of that is going to be. So we'll have to just keep an eye on it, I suppose. And the thing, of course, is there's more spacecraft being launched every year, and it's reckoned there'll be as many as 50,000 more satellites in orbit by the year 2030. And the effect that's going to have on the stratosphere and the ozone layer is not at all understood.
Yeah, now last Saturday, we didn't get really to see much of this, which was the eclipse over the Western Hemisphere. And stargazers across the Americas turned their faces upward last Saturday for a rare celestial event, which was an annular solar eclipse. Now, if you've ever seen these, Ben, I know you've been to these, to watch and just turn around and see everybody wearing protective eye gear or these cardboard solar eclipse glasses.
The eclipse shades, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic to watch that as well. So a big crowd of people wearing protective eyewear gathered in Albuquerque in New Mexico, which is one of the many across the western United States, watching as the moon passed between the sun and the earth at its furthest point from our planet. Now, we did get to see a tiny little bit of a chunk. Well, when I say a chunk, it was only a tiny bit from this side. I didn't get to see it. I don't know whether you did or not.
No, are we not? This is where I got confused last week with the total lunar eclipse next week or 2 weeks' time. I think that we'll be able to see some of that here, but not any of the eclipse. Not any of that solar eclipse.
No. This was the Ring of Fire eclipse over the Western Hemisphere. Again, you're planning to go away next year, Mr. Ben.
To the solar eclipse, which will take place on Monday, the 8th of April. Yeah,
so that's looking forward to that, of course. This is number four for you.
This will be number four.
A super eclipse chaser now.
Super eclipse chaser.
So you're doing a lot of travelling as well, so you're going here, there and everywhere over there. So.
We have to. When in the neighborhood, we're going to have to go down to Houston to the Space Center, won't we?
Yeah.
After that, I don't care. Space Center and the eclipse. I'll be happy with that.
Yeah, that's it.
Might get in a few other touristy things.
Yeah, the lots of touristy things to do as well. So there we go.
I'm sure there's more to Dallas than the school book depository, is there? And the grassy knoll.
Oh, there would be, yeah.
I'm sure there is. I'll have to do my research yet, for sure.
Yeah, and there's all of the eclipses at the moment and that sort of thing. And simulations of backwards time travel can improve scientific experiments, is what they're saying. So physicists have shown that simulating models of hypothetical time travel can solve experimental problems that appear impossible to solve using standard physics. Now, this is where it goes a little bit above my head and probably a little bit...
I read about this, yeah, but it's kind of... I know it's got to do with... the string theory comes into it. Well, it's quantum mechanics, isn't it? Things like that. And in theory, yes.
Yeah.
And they used an analogy of sending gifts to somebody that takes 3 days, and if you find out a day or two beforehand that you sent the wrong gift, you go back. And well, they're not saying time travel is possible, but
it's sort of doesn't look so good, really. I suppose
in theory, it's
They
say, you can do all sorts of things, but I think it's more a mathematical issue, and the things that it may help with quantum computing, perhaps, or something like that, as opposed to hopping into a time machine and going back to yesterday to right the wrongs that you did yesterday.
Back to the future or something like that. So I suppose if gamblers, investors and quantum experimentalists could bend the arrow of time, their advantage would significantly be higher, leading to significantly better outcomes. Now, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, you could get tonight's lotto numbers, whatever they are, whenever the lotto draw is, wait till the draw comes, and then go back and somehow buy a ticket.
So
the right numbers. But sure, then if we could all do that, then we'd all share the jackpot and we'd be back with less money than we'd
I don't care.
Spend on the
anything
ticket.
Would do. Anything's better than nothing.
We spend €3 on the ticket and you get €1 back because you have to share it with a million other people.
So that's what there are, simulations of backwards time travel at the moment. I'm going to keep an eye on that over the next coming while just to see exactly what happens there as well. And I've had a few books, Ben. I've been watching the 40 best space and astronomy books of 2023. And there are loads of them. This one caught my eye, Light in the Darkness. And this is by an author called Heino Falke. And he is experimenting, looking at black holes, the universe, and us. So that's worth a look because 69 sleeps away. We have a little man in a red suit coming to see us. Brief answers to the big questions. And this was a book that Stephen Hawking wrote. And, of course, the big one is there. But this is called Brief Answers to the Big Questions. So there's another one. And if you go onto the internet at some stage, they're not too expensive, these, at the moment. And Our Universe, an Astronomer's Guide from Joe Dunkley. That's another one for you there. And I would love to go in and explain everything that was in these, but I think I'd spoil everything for you, so we'll do that. We'll give you one more just for the crack. And The Crowd and the Cosmos. And you and I have both met Chris Lintott. Yeah, and this is an interesting one. So this was over 10 years ago, The Sky Tonight's Chris Lintott, if you remember Chris, and which we do. And he started a thing called Galaxy Zoo. And this was a citizen science project to classify galaxies. It was a huge success and instant. And at present, the Zooniverse encompasses over 70 science projects. So I won't go any further than that. So remember that book as well, The Crowd and the Cosmos from Chris Lintott. And loads of adventures there. But I have another so many books in a list here beside me.
Now, last Friday...
Yes.
The Psyche mission was launched on a Falcon Heavy rocket. Did you see the lift?
No, I didn't see the lift.
Oh, I did, but I didn't see it live, so it wasn't the usual tense moments for me because I knew it was successful. But impressive and all as the launch was, I thought the return of the two booster rockets landing back on the pad or wherever they landed to be recycled was quite impressive. You know, and the booster rockets on the side, and they come off, and then they go back down, fall back into the atmosphere, and then they fire retro rockets and land upright. And the two of them landed within a few seconds of each other and a few hundred meters apart. And I thought that was absolutely amazing. And so this Psyche mission, it's on a 3 billion kilometer, 6-year journey to the asteroid Psyche. And the what's interesting about this particular asteroid is they reckon it is has basically it's metal, and that it could be the very, basically like the star, it was a protoplanet or part of a planet at one stage as a planet was forming and got smashed up. And just that it would be like the core of the Earth, which is iron and other metals, mostly iron. Of course, at the center of the Earth, it's they're still molten. But this is the sort of, the people who are going to look at this then are the same. Well, it's like looking at the core of a planet, which is something you can't, you know, normally do. Most of the other asteroids out there, this is one of the, I think it's one of the 10 biggest asteroids, if I'm not mistaken, between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. And the, one of the instruments on it is a gamma ray spectrometer. And they're going to, with that, they can determine the ratio of metals, which metals are on it and which, and in what proportions. And they say it'd be just like looking at the core of a planet. And, so it's, the people who made this particular gamma ray spectrometer, they also made the one on the Messenger, which went to Mercury. And, on Mercury, the sun is 11 times brighter than on Earth, and the surface temperatures can reach 400 degrees Celsius. And they're also building one for a Japanese mission to be launched in October of next year, and also for another NASA mission called Dragonfly, which is a rotorcraft lander, which is going to be launched around 2027 to explore Titan, which, of course, as you know, is the largest moon of Saturn.
And just before we go, just reading in the last day or so that the conspiracy theories have resurfaced after Buzz Aldrin's interview on the famous Apollo 11 picture of the moon back, or should I say, from Earth to the moon, and all the other little queries and questions that were put to him. And one of them was that things were well staged, as the reflection in the visor and footprints in the moons and that sort of thing. So that's worth a little watch if you can go to Google World and just put in conspiracy theories of Buzz Aldrin of his interview on the famous Apollo 11 picture. So that's something to look forward to. Go for a wander through that, see what happens.
Okay, thank you for that, John, and for driving the sound desk. Don't forget our email address for any questions, comments or queries you may have is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And but that's all from me, Ben M, from this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, Bren Leinart with Threads. And 11 p.m, Nigel Wood with his World Music Mix and a program called Ear to the Globe. And then between midnight and 2 a.m., we have Dave Barry with his mix of jazz, blues and soul with his program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
And a very good night, John. Good night.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.